Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be trying to talk in a general kind of way about the issue of tax exemption. There are now across the country today a lot of organizations that are tax exempt. However, one of our guests this morning for the program, John Colombo, says that the nation's political leaders have never really, at least not recently, sat down and thought carefully about why it is that we grant tax-exempt status and what we expect from those organizations who get it, and perhaps also what it means to a community that some kind of large organization gets that tax exemption. This is something that members of Congress, both in the House and the Senate, have been thinking about quite a bit recently. And in fact, our guest here, John Colombo, and also Stan Jenkins, who chairs the Champaign County Board of Review, both of them earlier this year testified before Congress talking about this very subject. And we'll try to talk a little bit about the issue of tax exemption, and some of the conversation that's going on in Washington, and perhaps some of the ideas that people there on the Hill have about debating this and perhaps making some changes in the laws that govern the tax exemption. And people who are listening, of course, have questions, and I know our guests will take their best shot at responding to what people might have to say. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 is the number to call. We do also have a toll-free line, so that means if it would be a long-distance call for you, you may use that number, and the call's on us. That's 800-222-9455. And again, just to introduce our guests, John Colombo, he's professor of law here at the University of Illinois, and tax exemption is a particular special focus and interest of his. Is in his work, and Stanley Jenkins chairs the Champaign County Board of Review, and this is the body that's responsible for reviewing applications for property tax exemptions here in Champaign County. And as I said, questions are welcome at any point here. You want to give us a call, we would be happy to hear from people. Well, thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Just in a general way, maybe I could start by asking John Colombo, and I know that I have come across some quotes from you on this subject where you said something to the effect of people would be surprised, they might be shocked, in fact, if they knew how many different kinds of organizations there were across the United States that had a tax exemption. Can you give some overview?
That's true. There, at last count, there were over a million organizations on the Internal Revenue Service's list of tax-exempt organizations. And under the Internal Revenue Code, there are 28 different kinds of organizations that are eligible for tax-exempt status. For example, most people don't realize that the National Football League is a tax-exempt organization. Now, not the individual teams. The individual teams, obviously, are for-profit organizations, but the league itself qualifies for tax exemption under Section 501c6 of the code, which is for trade associations. So you have lots of trade associations. Fraternities and sororities are tax-exempt. And then you have this whole classification of organizations that we call charitable organizations, which actually is the biggest subset of tax-exempt organizations. And charitable organizations are very important because they get even more tax benefits than just exemption. It's charitable organizations that have the ability to get tax-deductible contributions. Charitable organizations can issue bonds that the interest is tax-exempt. They even get postal breaks on their mailings. So the sector is very, very broad. And a lot of organizations qualify for tax exemption, but it's important to remember that there are different kinds of tax exemption, and not all the organizations that qualify for tax exemption are ones that we consider charitable organizations. Mm.
Is it a minimum qualification that you be a nonprofit?
That's correct. All tax-exempt organizations have to be nonprofit. But it's important to realize that just because you're nonprofit does not mean you're automatically tax exempt. Tax exemption is governed by federal and state tax law. nonprofit status really just means that you have no owners, that you can't distribute any profits that you may have. It's funny because the word nonprofit, people think it means you can't make a profit. Well, that's not true. In fact, nonprofit organizations often make profits. Many of them make very substantial profits. The word nonprofit means that you don't have any owners. You can't distribute that profit to any individuals.
In Champaign County, Mr. Jenkins, do you know just offhand how many tax-exempt organizations there are?
No, I don't. But there are a lot of them.
Yeah. And, well, I'm sure that there are many and significant ones. And actually, we're sitting in the building that belongs to one of them, the University of Illinois. Are there many that are of that size, of the size of the U of I?
No. I mean, obviously, the U of I is going to have the most state-owned property, which is going to be tax-exempt. Municipal property is exempt. And then we get into the categories of property that Dr. Colombo referred to.
Mm-hmm. Is for you and the board, that's the people in the position of making the ruling when someone comes and they're applying for tax-exempt status and you have to decide when do they qualify, how clear are the rules to you? And is it a matter where almost anyone, we could sit them down and say, okay, here are the rules. Here's this organization that's applying for the tax exemption. What do you think? Would most people just say, well, yes, that's pretty clear? Or are there many cases where you could argue one way or another that a particular organization either is or is not? How clear is it?
Well, as with a lot of the state laws, there's ambiguity. And though it is spelled out pretty clearly, in terms of charitable status, that's directly it's directly referenced in the Illinois Constitution. It's addressed in the Illinois Property Tax Code, and it's also addressed over almost nearly a century of case law has addressed what qualifies as a charitable institution, thus being tax exempt as a charitable institution. And in every case, the Constitution, the statutes, it says that the organization has to be exclusively charitable, and it cannot be charitable by any secondary or incidental purpose. It has to be exclusively charitable. And what this does is sets the bar very high for organizations to meet that qualification of being tax exempt as a charitable organization. Mm-hmm. Now, the way it works in Illinois is when an organization applies for tax exempt status, that application goes to the local Board of Review. The Board of Review writes a recommendation to the Illinois Department of Revenue, but then it's the Department of Revenue who actually grants or denies exempt status.
And is how often is it that they would overrule their or rule differently from the recommendation of the local boards? Did they pretty much go with what local boards say? Or
no, I mean, it's not uncommon that they do not uphold a particular recommendation. But it certainly is not a rubber stamp process. Mm-hmm. We can do our best efforts to gather all the information we're supposed to before we forward it on to the Department of Revenue. But it is very common that the Department of Revenue then has further questions of the applicant, and then they will directly contact the applicant and request specific information in addition to what's already been submitted.
Yeah. Where, John, are the where are the big questions, though? Here, I mean, where is the wiggle room in this whole process?
Well, the biggest question really boils down to the category of organizations that we call charitable organizations. Those are the ones that are the most important for federal tax law, and they are the ones that are most important for state property tax law. Because, as Stan has pointed out, only charitable organizations are eligible for state property tax exemption. So the question, the major question, and the question that we grapple with at the federal level and at the state level is, what exactly is it that causes you to be a charity? How do we define what a charity is? And the interesting thing is that at least at the federal level, this is a question that is not very well explained in federal law. federal law says you have to be a charity to get tax exemption under 501c3. It gives some examples, educational organizations, religious organizations, but it doesn't really give you any specific standards for what constitutes being a charity. And as a result, you find organizations that operate in many different ways. We have organizations that are dedicated to poor relief, and those are the kinds of things that many people automatically think of as being charities, the Red Cross, the Salvation Army, those kinds of organizations. But you have organizations that also operate as that look a lot like for-profit businesses that manage to get tax exemption as well. Credit counseling agencies are a big issue with the federal government right now. And hospitals are a big issue with the federal government because these organizations tend to charge for their services and look a lot like for-profit businesses in some ways.
Yeah, I guess this is one of the really difficult issues, that you could have an organization that provides a very kind of a direct service, a homeless shelter. And it seems pretty clear that what that organization does and the function, and that's not much doubt about that. That is a charitable organization, and it's deserving of all of the rights and privileges that attach. But when you, for example, if you have a hospital, yes, it's true that they may provide some of that kind of same sort of service, but it seems that people in that business have another argument that they make, and there is some law that they can refer to back them up. And they say, but we're providing a general kind of benefit to the community because we're in the healthcare business and we treat people who are sick, and we make the community healthier, and that's a good thing. I mean, that we're providing a public benefit. And no one's going to argue with that, really, on the face of that. But then the question is, well, okay, now you say, well, wait a minute. There is some sort of fundamental difference between the hospital and the homeless shelter. How do you negotiate that whole argument?
Well, that's the problem. And at the federal level, hospitals have long, since 1969, we've recognized that hospitals are exempt under what we call the community benefit theory. That is, that they're providing this general benefit of providing health care for the community. But it is an issue because when I teach my tax-exempt organizations class, I start at the class with asking students this question. I said, suppose you're a resident of Redmond, Washington, which happens to have a pretty well-known corporation by the name of Microsoft there. Mm-hmm. And you're asked to make a choice. Do you want to keep Microsoft Corporation in your local community, or do you want to keep your local hospital? You get a choice. You can't have both. Which one would you choose to keep? And almost invariably, the students say, well, we would keep Microsoft because of the jobs they provide, because of the contribution to the local tax base, and so on and so forth. So there is a very strong argument that a lot of for-profit businesses provide very strong community benefits as well. I'm not doubting that hospitals provide very strong community benefits, but a lot of community benefits are provided by the for-profit businesses that pay taxes and employ people and provide benefits to their community. The businesses who support Little League provide benefits to their community as well. So it's a real problem for at the federal policy level to define what kind of community benefit it is that ought to result in tax exemption and what kind of community benefits don't result in tax exemption. And it's been a particular problem in the hospital sector, where we have some very difficult issues deciding why hospitals, which very often operate as fee-for-service businesses, ought to receive tax exemption. And a lot of that debate ends up centering on charity care, that is free care for the poor, and how much of it the hospitals, nonprofit hospitals, provide.
Mm-hmm. Well, Professor Columbia here was just talking about the fact that at the national level, perhaps this is a difficult sort of distinction to make. How about at the local level?
Well, at the local level, under state law, for a property to be exempt, it has to be both in exempt use and it has to be in exempt ownership. Both hurdles have to be crossed. Locally, in the case of the two hospitals, in each case, and let me back up and say, case law goes on to say that, or the statute goes on to say that the property cannot be leased or otherwise used with a view to profit. Well, in the case of both hospitals, there were significant areas of the exempt hospital itself being leased out to other for-profit entities that were working inside of the hospital. In terms of use, that is somewhat of a deal breaker. It's not a complete deal breaker because there can be certain prorations taken out to determine what portion in terms of square footage is used by these for-profit entities. And the Department of Revenue may in fact rule that, well, 30% is taxable, but the other 70% is tax exempt. But the use is certainly an issue, as well as the ownership. And then when we get into ownership, it does become more of a question of some of the issues Dr. Colombo referred to, and that is how much charity is dispensed to the community in return for that tax-exempt status. And looking at that, as well as a variety of other issues around that ownership, it became increasingly apparent to us that we did not feel that that standard, that burden of proof, had been met to demonstrate that it was in charitable ownership or in charitable use, mm-hmm. or exempt ownership or exempt use, I should say.
Mm-hmm. I might point out that Illinois is actually pretty unique among the states in the way it defines its tax exemption standards, particularly as they apply to healthcare providers and hospitals. Illinois case law, I think, is pretty clear that in order to be exempt, hospitals have to have a charity care program. They have to be dispensing charity. And the case law indicates that that means they have to be providing free care for the poor. That's not true in a lot of other states. A lot of other states have standards for exemption that are as vague as the federal standard. So you don't really know what it is that hospitals have to do in order to get exemption in some other states.
Mm. Well, I'm wondering, as a kind of a general question, to the extent that you can answer it, as you look at various nonprofits around the country, whether you think that there are a lot of cases where the organizations that are claiming the tax exempt status are pushing it, that they're pushing things to the very limit that they can push it to maintain their tax exempt status, and yet just come as close as possibly to stepping over the line as they possibly can, and you know, maybe we wouldn't blame them for doing that.
Well,
wouldn't be surprised if they did.
It's pretty clear at the federal level, at least, that the two kinds of organizations that I think push the envelope are credit counseling agencies and hospitals. And I should say that we have – part of the problem is, as a society, we sort of have this schizophrenia about nonprofit organizations. We want them to be entrepreneurial. We want them to generate funds to help their mission. And then when they become entrepreneurial, when they start to operate like a business, then we get very concerned about that and say, well, now what are they doing to qualify for exempt status? So as a society, we have our own problems with this issue. We need to make a decision. Do we want our nonprofits to be entrepreneurial or don't we? But it is clear that those that are, the hospitals and credit counseling agencies are two of the prime examples. Those are the ones where in individual cases, not all cases, but in individual cases, you will see organizations going as far as possible up to the line. Hospitals that want to do as little charity care as they possibly can. Credit counseling agencies that are really just accepting fees almost as referral fees, so that they can then channel people into different lenders, and those are the issues that are I think of primary concern in terms of qualification for exempt status.
Mm. Did you want to add something?
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to introduce real quick the both of you again for people who might have tuned in, and also we have a caller here we want to bring into the conversation. John Colombo is professor of law here at University of Illinois Law School, and this whole subject of tax exemption is a particular interest of his in his work. He teaches classes that deal with the subject, and Stanley Jenkins is the chairman of the Champaign County Board of Review, and this is the body that's responsible for reviewing applications for property tax exemptions. And as he explained, that they review it, they go over all the information, they make a recommendation, then ultimately it goes to the Illinois Department of Revenue that's the final voice one way or another. And it is possible that the Illinois Department of Revenue would go with the recommendation or not, or take the process further, collect more information, and so forth. And we're talking generally about the idea of the tax exemption, how it is that we decide what organizations can qualify and what they're expected to return to the community. And questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Here we do have a caller in Urbana to talk with. Line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I wanted to ask for more information on something that's rarely discussed, and you brought it up earlier, that is the theory under which tax exemption is granted. And in particular, I wondered, based on an article we heard this morning about inheritance taxes, what generally is the theory under which some inheritances can be taxed and others can't? There's always a lot of political discussion on individual cases and particular laws, but I've never heard an underlying theory of inheritance. And could you address that? Thank you.
Okay. I don't know. Can you address that?
Well, the inheritance tax or the estate tax is out of my field. I have colleagues at the college who know a lot about the estate tax laws. What I can comment on is a couple of other questions. The first one, which is, why do we grant tax exemptions? Well, that's a really good question. I know the answer to that historically. The historic answer to that was that churches were tax exempt, and the reason they were tax exempt is because people thought it wasn't a nice thing to tax God. So historically, it's quite clear where we got our tax exempt status from. It was the notion that men could not tax God, and therefore churches and temples were tax exempt. And then over time, that expanded to other kinds of activities. Schools, for example, educational organizations, but they were exempt largely because in the 16, 17, even 1800s, most schools were religiously organized. So they were related to religion. So they were related to this concept of we shouldn't tax God. In the United States, we began to expand tax exemption to many other secular activities. And now I would say that our general thought is we grant tax exemption because these are organizations that provide some kinds of public benefits that are not being provided by either the private market or by government. So they operate in an area in which services are unavailable either from the private market or from government. And that's the basic theory, I think, on why we grant tax exemption. The question about the caller's question also raised another thing, which is, why do we allow people to take deductions from their taxes for donations? And that's often where you get large estates being escaping tax because they donate a lot of money to charitable organizations. And the answer there, I think, is pretty simple. We have decided as a society that we want to encourage private philanthropy, and giving a tax deduction is the way to encourage private philanthropy. So if you don't like that idea, well, I would tell you, talk to your congressman about it. But it's pretty clear that that's why we do it.
Mm-hmm. There is, I think, one of the questions, and I don't know if this is something that we can talk about in a general way, but I think one of the reasons that we wanted to have Mr. Jenkins on the show is at least to try to get at the issue of what it costs, what granting tax exemption costs the community. We think that there are benefits. Certainly, tax-exempt organizations would argue that they benefit the community in many ways by the various services that they provide. And in many cases, I'd say, well, we would agree, yes, indeed, that they do provide benefits to the community. But we also do have to acknowledge the fact that there's a cost because we're losing that revenue that would come from the taxes that they would otherwise pay that we would use for all of the services that municipalities provide. So we may be gaining on the one hand, we may be losing on the other. Is it actually possible in some general way to talk about what, for example, what in Champaign County we lose because we grant the tax exemption to these organizations?
I can't give you a dollar amount, but I mean it's literally millions and millions of dollars. Mm. As Dr. Colombo said, exemption, in my view at least, is It's by virtue of the charitable benefit that is returned to the community. And the trade-off is the organization is tax-exempt. Mm-hmm. One example. One of the local hospitals, by their own numbers, contributed about $1.3 million in charitable care to people who deserved free or discounted care at their cost. On just two parcels of property, the tax savings was about $2 million. This isn't even a dollar-for-dollar trade-off. This is one of the issues we looked at. So $2 million worth of tax savings versus $1.3 in actual charity care returned to the community. Now, never mind the other properties that this institution owned that are also tax-exempt and the savings from those properties. Never mind the sales tax exemption, which saves them millions of dollars a year that they're not paying in sales tax. Never mind the fact that they're exempt from paying corporate and or state and federal corporate income tax. Never mind all those. We're talking just two parcels. There was a $2 million savings, and there's $1.3 returned to the community in actual charity care. This just didn't make sense to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I promise I got some callers here we'll get right to, but now let me come back to John Colombo then. As people, particularly now in Washington, are thinking about this whole business, I mean, how do they view a case like that? And do they say that it's in any way a federal responsibility? Do they say, well, this is state of Illinois business? Do they also look at this business of the gain versus the cost, and do they say, well, at least there ought to be a dollar-for-dollar kind of swap, and if you get into a situation where you're actually losing more than you get, then what do we do about that?
It is a concern. The property tax obviously is a local concern. The Congress doesn't really have any particular interest in how Illinois administers its property tax laws. Mm-hmm. But there is a similar concern at the congressional level because of the revenue lost by tax exemption at the federal income tax level. For example, one number that's often thrown around with respect to nonprofit hospitals is that the federal government loses about $8 billion a year because of the federal tax exemption. And researchers have shown that hospitals as a whole do not give back $8 billion a year in charity care. So there is concern at the congressional level about what are we getting for tax exemption? What is the quid pro quo? Now, I might note that, you know, that hospitals would make the argument that they give back more to the community than just charity care, that they provide educational programs, that the fact that we have a level one trauma center in Champaign-Urbana is a big benefit to the community. There aren't a lot of communities that have level one trauma centers. So they would make the argument that the concept of community benefit extends far beyond the notion of just charity care. The problem with that, and the problem that I've often had with that, is that you can argue that almost anything is a community benefit, and when you start quantifying things, it gets very difficult to figure out what the trade-off is, and that means, of course, that you know you can always argue that we're giving back more to the community than the exemption is worth. But yeah, the dollar trade-off is of serious concern to some people on Capitol Hill.
Let's talk with some other folks here. Champagne caller is next, line number two. Hello.
Hello. Yes, I remember hearing once that the Champaign Country Club was tax-exempt, and it struck me as totally unfair. And did I hear that correctly?
I don't know specifically whether the Champaign Country Club is tax-exempt, but I could tell you that as a general matter, clubs, fraternal organizations and clubs do get tax exemption under federal tax law. They're not charities. That is, you can't make tax-deductible contributions to these organizations, but they are tax-exempt and do not have to pay federal income tax.
About real estate tax? The amount of land, prime real estate taken up by the Champaign Country Club would be a significant revenue loss in real estate terms, and there doesn't seem to me to be any justification for them not paying. That's a very exclusive, owners-only private club.
Well, let's have Stan Jenkins answer that question. He ought to know.
Well, I don't specifically know if the Champaign Country Club is taxable or if it is exempt. Just as some background information as to how this process works. Once exemption is granted by the Department of Revenue, Subsequent to that, each year a status form has to be resubmitted to the local supervisor of assessments. And that status form simply says that the ownership and the use is the same now as it was when the exemption was really granted. Those status forms, we, the Board of Review, we never deal with them. We typically don't even see them. We deal with it on the front end when they're first applying.
If one were to sit in my situation right now and look at that and say on the face of it, it strikes me as unfair, inequitable, perhaps was pushed through underneath someone's eyes when there was no scrutiny, and perhaps this should be revisited. How would that become revisited? I'm talking about real estate taxes in particular here.
Well, that's a good question, and I'm not sure there's a simple answer to it, because once that exemption is granted, and as long as those status forms are returned on an annual basis, affirming that the use is the same and the ownership is the same, then that exempt status continues. About the only way that realistically that would ever change would be if the local township assessor took it upon himself or herself to go out and revalue that property, put it on the tax rolls, and then trigger a new application process. And in each case with the local hospitals, for varying reasons, that is what happened. They were put back on the tax rolls. That triggered a reapplication process.
And who would one speak to have that done?
Well, I mean, you'd certainly start with your local assessor, the township assessor, or the supervisor of assessments.
Who is Joanne Chester?
And Joanne Chester's the township assessor for Cunningham Township.
And is the Champaign Country Club in Cunningham Township?
No, the Champaign Country Club is actually in the city of Champaign Township.
And who is the tax assessor for that?
That's Brian Christie.
Brian Christie.
Okay. Let me just break in for just a second, because I personally don't know whether the Champaign Country Club pays taxes or not, but I'd be very surprised if they didn't. And the reason for that is because under Illinois law, property tax exemption is available for charitable institutions, not for private clubs.
Right.
So it would be surprising if the Champaign Country Club was not paying property taxes, because I don't believe they would qualify as a charitable organization.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that that it struck me as unfair, and I just kind of thought, oh, that can't be. But then I never thought about it again until I heard this conversation. I thought, well, we should make sure that isn't true.
Well,
that would be totally inequitable.
If you want to find out if in fact they are exempt or not, you can call 384-3758. And just whoever answers the phone, ask them to punch up the country club and see if they've been exempted or if they're actually paying a property tax bill.
Okay. I appreciate your help.
Thank you. And this is the kind of thing that is a matter of public record.
Yes.
Yes.
You can't – so it's not a secret.
No big secrets here. This is all public record.
Go to the county records.
All right. Let's go to Urbana. This is line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I think when you look closely, what you're going to find is the Champaign Country Club isn't part of the city of Champaign. They're too big. The city can't take them in without their willingness, and they're not willing.
That may be if they have not been annexed in, but just by virtue of not being part of the city of Champaign does not mean that they would not be paying property tax.
But they won't be paying for, say, Champaign schools.
Yes, they would be. I'm sorry to disagree with you here, but the tax dollar is actually broken up to about 9 or 10 different taxing bodies, and the city of Champaign, corporate city of Champaign, is just one of those taxing bodies. Now, if they have not been annexed into the city of Champaign, they may not be paying Champaign city tax, but they would be paying tax into the school districts, Parkland College, the Forest Preserve, county government, township government, so on and so forth.
Uh-huh. Well, somebody better look at that. But they've avoided being part of Champaign.
Okay. Well,
they don't want to be. Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll go on to another caller here. This is somebody on cell phone line number 1. Hello.
Hi. I'd like to just make 2 brief comments. I missed part of the show, so you may have already covered this. But in my accountant's office, he has the original tax form that was developed, in the early 1900s or so. And it's very interesting because there's a tax exemption built right into the very original form where merchants, particularly merchants of shipping vessels, did not have to pay taxes on at least some of their profits. So there may have been a concept of we don't tax God, but there was certainly political influence from the very beginning of the taxation of the American people. And the second point I want to make, which is just sort of relevant to something you said, is that we had at one time a good governor, which is, I'm not making a comment on the governor we have now, and he pointed out that we would never have fair education in this state as long as educational money was being based on local property taxes. And nobody wanted to do that. And that's never been popular. And I think when sometimes we talk about the government and what they're willing to do and what they're not willing to do and helping people make themselves self-sufficient, you find over and over and over again that the American population is more than willing to help people using other people's income, but not their own. In other words, they don't want their property taxed for anybody else's purpose. And we ought to recognize that that's what Americans do. It's not just the government involved in that. And I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
All right. Well, I don't know if you want to comment on that. I mean, this whole business of school funding, as long as I can remember, so we're talking about probably a good 30 years and maybe longer than that, people have been talking about changing that mechanism. And in fact, just recently, some members of the legislature in Springfield again put out this proposal there to change the reliance on the property tax to fund the schools. And I don't think it went too far. And there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of sentiment in Springfield to make that change. I expect we're going to be talking about it next year and the year after that and the year after that. But whether anything has ever changed, I don't know. It would surprise me, actually, if that change happened.
Yeah, that gets to sort of general tax policy that's sort of far out of range of tax exemption. And certainly you can have opinions about whether property taxes are an appropriate way to fund any kind of local service, and particularly local schools. But that's just sort of a general tax policy question that the politicians are going to have to resolve sooner or later.
Well, let me just say that we started out at least talking about the issue of tax exemption. Why is it that some organizations get tax exempt status? What do we expect from them? What's the mechanism? And part of the reason that we're doing it is that we know that in Washington now recently, there has been some conversation both in the House and the Senate about this whole issue and about whether, in fact, the rules for tax exemption should be changed or possibly should be tightened. And both of our guests have this past spring testified I think it was the House, wasn't it?
Yes.
Ways and Means Committee. Both of them were there in Washington, among the many people that I'm sure were there testifying, talking about this issue. John Colombo, who's professor of law here at the University of Illinois, and tax exemption is a particular special interest of his. Stanley Jenkins is chair of the Champaign County Board of Review, and they're obviously responsible for reviewing applications for tax exemptions.
Just one quick clarification. The chairmanship on the board rotates periodically. I'm no longer chairman, but I was at the time much of this was going on. That's okay.
He's the former chairman and a member, current member of the Champaign County Board of Review. And questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Urbana is up next, line two. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I missed the first half of the program, so if you've already touched on these issues, you can move on to other things, and I'll listen later on the Internet. The first thing I was wondering about was how the university's tax-exempt status affects Urbana versus Champaign. There's an impression among people that I know in Urbana, anyway, that Urbana gets hurt more than this than Champaign does, and I was hoping you could comment on that. And the second thing is not exactly related to tax exemption, so maybe you don't want to discuss it, but there are areas that the MTD decides to annex that don't want to be annexed into the MTD because they don't want higher taxes. I was wondering, you know, we've seen this just in the last couple of days with Southwest Champaign. I was wondering what your thoughts were on those two issues.
Okay. Well, the second, I don't know that is something that we can comment on. It really just doesn't fall within the area that we're talking about, or really that the area that the guests deal with. The first question, though, I would expect that perhaps Stan Jenkins does have an answer. When you take a look at the amount of university property, that's how much is in Champaign, how much is in Urbana. Do you know how that breaks down?
I don't know the exact breakdown. I believe Urbana probably suffers more greatly than the city of Champaign. Yeah. Although I do know there's been some agreements drawn up between the university and I don't know if it's the city or the school district to lessen the impact of those tax dollars not coming in to help educate children. And in many respects, you have a lot of university families come in living in Urbana that have children in the school district, but yet those properties that the university owns and oftentimes where these families live with their children may be tax exempt because they are university owned. But there have been some agreements to mitigate the impact on the school district between the school district and the university.
Okay. Let's talk next with someone in Savoy. Line 3.
Hi. I have a couple questions. Mm-hmm. If in our previous example, a tax-exempt hospital provides $1 million of charitable care to patients who are in need of that care, and the local tax system loses, say, $2 million in real estate taxes, is it accurate or fair to assess that relationship on a dollar-to-dollar comparison because $1 million is being directly or $1 million is being directly applied to healthcare patients who need that type of assistance. But if the hospital were not tax exempt and giving, say, $2 million in real estate taxes to the municipality, would $1 million of that $2 million end up benefiting healthcare patients? Or would it be put into more of a general type fund that would not really benefit patients to the same extent that it would be under the scenario that the hospital is tax exempt in providing that type of care? And my second question is, do the speakers have an opinion as to whether or not there is any relationship between the tax exempt status on hospitals and the rate of increase of healthcare costs? And if so, could you please speak to whatever your theories might be on that relationship?
Okay, I'll take a stab at both of those questions. With respect to the first, the dollar for dollar comparison, that is an issue. The hospitals would argue that it's not fair to make a dollar for dollar comparison because, as you point out, there is a flow of money directly to a need for health care, and they would also say that they do a lot more than just provide charity care. My own view about that one is you've really asked a question about how much do you trust your local government. And I would say, you know, if you don't trust your local government to collect the $2 million in taxes and spend them for the right things, then you might prefer the system we've got now. If you do trust your local government to make appropriate decisions in the public good, and that's in theory why we have government, then seems to me it would be a better deal for the government to collect the $2 million and spend it on the things that it believes is important for the citizens to have as part of their governmental functions. I've now forgotten what the second question was.
The second question was, do you have an opinion as to whether or not there is any relationship between the tax exempt
of
hospitals and the rate of increase in healthcare?
Right. The answer to that is probably not. There have been a lot of studies done of comparing both nonprofit and for-profit hospitals, And what those studies generally find is that there's not much difference in the rates that are charged. There's not much difference in the services that are provided. There's not much difference, actually, in the amount of charity care they provide. People actually don't realize that a lot of for-profit hospitals provide charity care. They call it bad debt because they're accounting for it in a for-profit way, but they actually do provide charity care. And interestingly enough, many academic studies have shown that for-profit hospitals tend to provide similar amounts of charity care as nonprofit hospitals. But it doesn't appear that there is any relationship, at least not one that we can track down, between exempt status and the increases in health care costs. So that seems to be driven by market factors that are beyond sort of the ownership method that you have for health care organizations.
And thank you very much.
If I could also add, that charitable status is driven by more than just an analysis of that dollar-for-dollar trade-off. I mean, there are three major controversies that are really caught fire and gained a lot of national attention is how the uninsured patient is charged. And it is not uncommon. It is very typical in the hospital industry today two people go in the hospital for exactly the same care or service, and one has no insurance and the other is insured, that person with no insurance is going to be billed 2 to 5 times higher than the person with insurance for exactly the same Band-Aid or aspirin. The second controversy that's gotten legs here in regards to charitable status is the availability of charity care and the amount of it. That's what we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. And the third is the collection practices of hospitals and how they deal with patients who have been unable to pay. And here is kind of the scenario that we ran into that just didn't make sense to us. If you have an uninsured patient who goes in the hospital and is billed more for the same service than anyone else is billed, first of all, it should be recognized that most people who do not have insurance, it's not by choice. It's because of economic circumstance. They can't afford insurance in the first place. So then you have someone goes in the hospital, they're billed more than anybody else for exactly the same service, and then when they can't pay, they wind up getting drugged through the court system for payment. And the results of these collection practices have been pretty profound in terms of how it affects people's lives. I mean, once a judgment is made against a patient who is unable to pay, I mean, and these are examples that come right out of this community. Property has been seized, wages have been garnished, people have been forced into bankruptcy, arrest warrants have been issued, and in some cases, people have actually been jailed because they did not appear in court over a hospital bill. Now, when we looked at the entire picture of what was going on dealing with the pricing of the uninsured, the amount of charity care provided, and the collection procedures, we didn't think these activities were befitting a charitable organization, and especially when measured against the language of the Constitution, the statutes, and case law.
Yeah. And I think, too, and that's here, there are some really specific questions here for this community in this particular situation. I think also to what Professor Colombo was saying before, it raised to me some sort of some general questions that, again, sort of go to the policymakers, particularly when you take a look at hospitals, for-profit, non-profit, and you set them beside one another and you look at what they do and you have to ask the question, what exactly is the difference here? What's the difference between the non-profit and the for-profit? There doesn't really seem to be much of any difference.
That's exactly right. I mean, the bulk of academic studies that have been done comparing nonprofit and for-profit operations show that there is no discernible difference in the quality of care, in the cost of care. There's not much of a difference in how much charity care is given. There was one recent study done by a person at the Michigan Law School that indicated that nonprofit hospitals may provide more unprofitable services than for-profit hospitals. But query why that is. That may just be a historical artifact because hospitals historically have been tax exempt. So it may just be that that's a historical artifact. So the bulk of evidence that we have is that in markets where you have both for-profit and nonprofit hospitals, the behavior really converges and there really isn't any difference between the two.
And many respects, I mean, personal view here, I think hospitals have every right to be paid for goods and services provided like any other business. I think they have a right, like a for-profit hospital or any other business, they have every right to set their charges however they want. They have every right, like any other business, to pursue collections through the court system. But I would submit that you can't have it both ways. You cannot conduct business like any other business, yet expect tax exemption unlike any other business.
Yeah, we're really at the point where we're going to have to quit, and my apologies here. We have a couple of callers we can't take. Just real quick, I want to ask John Colombo. Obviously, they've been, as I said, there's been some discussion of this whole business of the law and should it be changed in Congress. Now, there are a lot of members of Congress have a lot of other things that might seem to have a higher level of priority. But do you expect this is something that perhaps over the next couple of years there might indeed be some serious action taken in Congress?
I think there will be some action taken with regard to some peripheral issues, how nonprofits report their activities, maybe some issues regarding nonprofit governance. I don't really believe there's going to be much activity on the essential core question of the test for tax exemption. We went through this back in the early 1990s. There were hearings specifically on nonprofit hospitals. There was actually legislation proposed at that time. Nothing happened then. There are a lot of other things, a lot of other big issues on Congress's plate at this time. And while there is interest, I believe, at the congressional level, I for my own health, I'm not going to be holding my breath on this one.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you both very much. John Colombo, he's professor of law, University of Illinois.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Stanley Jenkins, he is member of the Champaign County Board of Review. Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for this program, Focus 580, comes from the Infant Parent Institute with offices in Champaign. The Infant Parent Institute is a private clinical practice and research institute dedicated to supporting the mental health of young children and their families. Information available on the web at infantparent.com. Also, the program made possible by a grant from Bodywork Associates, this year celebrating their 23rd anniversary. Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Coming up a little bit later on the Afternoon Magazine, if you're a fan of the outdoors, you enjoy walking, bird watching, or canoeing, we hope that you'll be with us for the 1 o'clock hour of the show. Celeste Quinn will be talking with Joel Greenberg. He's a naturalist, lawyer, and writer. He's written a natural history of the 19 counties of the Chicago region of Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Michigan. And he'll be talking with Celeste Quinn in the 1 o'clock hour of the show today. The show gets underway at noon with the usual mix of news, weather, sports, and other things. And as I say, Celeste Quinn is the host. In the next part of this show, we'll be talking with Jim Wallace. He is well known as a public theologian. He is the founder of Sojourners, a nationwide network of progressive Christians. And we'll be talking about the involvement of people in faith in politics. And he's authored a recent book on this. It's titled God's Politics, Why the Right Gets It Wrong and the Left Doesn't Get It. He'll be talking with us by telephone in the next hour. We'll take a break here as we usually do. We'll have news and an update on the markets.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for his crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
On the Chicago Board of Trade, September wheat up 4 at 334.5. December 348.5, up 3.25. September corn 240.25, up 3.75. December 251.75, up 4.